This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
The homelessness crisis.
A homeless encampment on water sank. But remember, we care about the environment. We care about the orcas. We care about their survival. But we're cool if these boats just sink covered in stuff that probably should not be floating in the water. The camp was made on three boats that were sort of rafted together. They were illegally tied up to a fishing net piling, and it belongs to the Duwamish tribe, but it's in an area that is under the jurisdiction of the Port of Seattle, and of course, they've not done anything about it. They've known about it for about a month.
Honestly, this is probably the first major concentration of having three boats together like that I've come across.
So that's Mike DeSota. He is with the Marine Division Environmental Compliance Manager. He is the Marine Division Environmental Compliance Manager over at the Port of Seattle. And he was talking with Como TV. And he said, yeah, we learned about this a while back, but, you know.
There was a homeless concentration of people that were coming back and forth to the vessel via various methods, whether it was a dinghy or an inflatable or swimming. It doesn't happen that often, but it does happen, and when we do, we see this cloud of confusion on the ownership of the vessel.
Okay, yeah, it sounds really confusing to stop people from going on to illegally tied up boats. Well, it sank, so I guess it's not that big of an issue anymore. Two boats of the three that were tied together sank about a week ago in the Duwamish waterway. Como says that the Coast Guard came to pump out the fuel that was being spilled into the water and then remove any of the hazardous chemicals that were on board. And, you know, he made the point of when something like this happens, yes, we know that it falls under our jurisdiction, but we're not exactly sure how we go about handling a, you know, whatever version of eviction would fall under situations like this. And, yeah.
Say they go to a City of Seattle property.
Got that.
It becomes a whole different problem for the City of Seattle because it's a different governing agency.
Can I just say that the reason why this happened the way that it happened is because we permit it to happen? That we're okay with this? We did a story in the last hour, about 30 minutes or so ago, about a tent city being housed now in this part of city property. And the city's not doing anything to move them. They're basically saying, anyone out there want to house 40 different tents in Tent City 3? Because there are no consequences, they go ahead and do that. And what do you think is going to happen? Yes, of course, it's weird and a little bit more out of the ordinary for it to happen on water. But I guess if it's happening on land with abandon, it's going to happen on water as well. These folks who are in need of a home will find any kind of shelter that they can. Does this sound like people who are looking for help? I'm just throwing it out there. If you're willing to tie together three boats, literally swim to them to get in, does that seem like someone who's going to take us up on our offer of help? Probably not. And it would be a sad error in judgment for any of us to assume that this is not going to continue to happen, whether we're talking about Seattle or Tukwila or Tacoma, or even Bellevue and Everett. Like, it's going to keep happening until we decide we're going to enforce the law. I believe in a carrot and a stick approach. There needs to be some kind of disincentive to stop this kind of behavior. If you're going to decide to live out on the streets and we're going to give you help, if you say no, we need to do something. We can't just keep waiting months and months and months or years and years and years hoping that the person we're offering services to will suddenly start to trust us. I get maybe giving them a couple of chances, but at some point you have to say, okay, we're here to help. You're saying no. We're not going to allow you to pollute our waters. We're not going to allow you to throw your garbage all over our parks. This land belongs to all of us. It's going to be enjoyed by all of us. And if you don't want to play by the rules, well, that's kind of on you. It's an approach that has worked in Marysville, thanks to Mayor John Nearing. It's an approach that is working in Arlington. They have cops and social workers connecting with these people and give them two very clear options. You either take the help that we're offering or we're going to arrest you because right now you're breaking the law. We prefer that you take us up on our offer of resources. We're going to get you that mental health that you need. We're going to get you the addiction services you might require. We're going to put you in a shelter, but you cannot continue this behavior because not only is it bad for you, but it's bad for all of the other people around you who are just trying to get by, who are just trying to live, who are just trying to take their kids to this park. If you don't want our help, fine, punished. And there's a good solution if you don't want our help and you don't want to be punished. Stop coming to our city. Go somewhere else. We allow this to happen, and this is a result. This is a consequence. It gets worse and worse and worse with no end in sight. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
Hey, look at this. The RNC just raised $20.8 million in July. That's almost three times as much money as the DNC ended up raising in July. And in fact, it was the largest amount ever received during the month of July in a non-election year, which is now twice the amount of money that the DNC has on hand. This, according to the chairwoman of the RNC, Ronna McDaniel. RNC Rapid Response Director Steve Guess said that the fundraising, and we made reference to this yesterday, 1,100% higher than from where it was in 2016 of July, and 1,900% more than July of 2015. And he told the Daily Caller that the DNC's financial situation is in such a mess, they're now relying on Hillary Clinton and Mexico to hold their fundraisers. Now, let's at least be fair with these numbers. When you've got one person as your nominee, and it's this early, you're going to raise a lot of money. But that's not really what this story is about. We are told that Donald Trump is deeply unpopular. People hate him. People loathe him. People are sick and tired of him. He's got a 62% disapproval rating. Oh my gosh, this is going to be so easy for the Democrats to win. If that were true, if that sentiment against the president were true, it would not be showing up in this way financially. You would not be getting $20.8 million with a 1,900% increase. It would not be this high if he were so unpopular. We've had the conversation for a very long time that the pollsters out there do not know how to poll Trump supporters. Now, that is very, very good for Trump, who has a better sense of where he stands and his campaign has a better sense of where they stand than the media. The media will look at the polling numbers and they will try to just say, it's done. Dead on arrival. There's no way he's going to have an easy time. No, he's not going to win. And then, of course, the narrative becomes, oh, this is going to be an easy win for the Democrats. And the Democrats, as a result of that, are going to do what Hillary Clinton did, which is not take Trump and his campaign seriously. So while they decide not to take it seriously, because they're looking at these polls that suggest that Trump is deeply unpopular, well, the RNC is raising tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars that they're going to be able to use, not just to outspend the DNC in this election campaign, but something we learned from the Trump campaign the last time around. They are really, really, really good digitally. They know how to use Facebook. They know how to use Twitter, not just to get the message across, but to specifically target voters that they know are going to turn out and vote for him. And so they're able to get a ground game that's just digitally done in places like Michigan and Wisconsin and maybe even here in Washington State. And all along, the Democrats, whoever the nominee is going to be, they're not going to be paying that close attention because they're going to buy into the nonsense coming from the media that Donald Trump is the worst president ever and he's got no support. Yeah, well, you don't raise $20.8 million in July in a non-election year when you've got a nominee that has no support. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter if you'd like. Twitter.com/JasonRance. We've got a fun Jay Inslee video going up later tonight. You're not going to want to miss Twitter.com/JasonRance. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So unfortunately, all of my grade A Inslee for President comedy is not going to work out anymore when I MC the upcoming Washington State GOP dinner. It's happening on September 13th in Bellevue. I had all of this great commentary and comedy ready, But unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to use it. But the good news in all of this is the country dodged a very huge bullet with the governor's exit from the presidential campaign. However, Washington State now has to deal with the potential third term of Governor Jay Inslee. He announced earlier today that, yes, he is running for re-election after the country rejected him. Joining me on the line with his reaction is the pride of Puyallup. He's the chairman of the Washington State GOP, Caleb Heilmich. Caleb, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Jason. Happy to do it.
I know you're happy today because we're doing this the day after he decided that he's not going to run for president anymore. We all knew it was going to be a failure from the beginning. Unfortunately, he's now said he's going to run for governor a third term. What do you make of that decision?
I honestly believe he is very vulnerable, and a third term is a tough task. It's a tall order, especially when he spent the last 5 months telling the voters of Washington State that he wanted a different job. I mean, he was traveling around the country seeking the office of the presidency. I think realistically, he was running to get his name out there, get the issue out there, and maybe secure a spot in the cabinet if a Democrat were to win in 2020. But our task is really to get the message out to the voters, and I'm focused on three things. Number one, it's clear Inslee doesn't want the job. He's been running for a different job. This is not where his heart's at. Number two, he owes the taxpayers millions of dollars. We had to subsidize his presidential run by paying for his security as he was traveling around the country. We launched that petition website. If people haven't signed it yet, please go to InsleeTrip.com. We're actually going to go to the governor's mansion at noon tomorrow and deliver those petitions. We've already had 4,800 people sign the petition,
nice.
So we're looking for 200 more names today. So go to InsleeTrip.com and say, Governor Inslee, do the right thing. Reimburse the taxpayers the millions of dollars you took from us on your vanity run for the White House. And then the third thing is Governor Inslee's priorities don't line up with the voters of Washington State. He championed a carbon tax that the voters rejected with 56% of the vote. He's now championing a capital gains income tax. That's something that the voters don't want. So as we look ahead, we're going to be reminding the voters across Washington State he doesn't want the job, he doesn't represent our values, he's not doing anything about homelessness, about traffic congestion getting worse every day, about our taxes increasing. So we deserve a governor who actually wants the job, and that's our message for the next 13 months as we try and flip Washington State.
I got to say, that first point, I think, is going to legitimately talk to voters on the left. I mean, what he's essentially, what he did was, hey, I'm dating a person, but I think there's better women out there for me to date. So I'm going to go play the field a little bit, goes out there, gets rejected, then comes back and expects like a warm embrace. And I can't imagine even Democrats are going to ultimately be okay with that.
Yeah, that's right. I think there's a real lack of enthusiasm on the Democrat side in supporting his candidacy. And I've likened it to, who of us could tell our boss, I'm going to travel the country for the next 5 months applying for different jobs, and then when I come back, I'm going to expect you to renew me for a four-year contract. It's not how the real world works, but that's how Governor Inslee is treating the voters of Washington State.
So in all of this, I mean, I kind of feel bad for Attorney General Bob Ferguson or Public Lands Commissioner Hillary Franz. I mean, they clearly wanted to run for governor. Do you think that given the circumstances that he's coming back after trying to go for another job, do you think that he might get a challenger? Ferguson's already come out and endorsed the reelection campaign, so let's cross him off the list.
Yeah, so Ferguson did. Hillary Franz endorsed Governor Inslee as well, as did Dow Constantine. So I think the main three are certainly taking the step back. You never know. I mean, somebody out of Seattle might challenge him. So I think that's a possibility. What we're focused on is just making sure every voter in Washington State understands what's at stake. What's interesting to me is in his press conference today, Inslee tried to say he would not accept a cabinet position. And my response to that would be, well, we can't really trust anything that comes out of Governor Inslee's mouth, because 8 years ago when he was running for governor, he said, now's not the time to talk about raising taxes. And then every legislative session, he's done more than talk about raising taxes. He's raised taxes. So he's already shown that his word isn't any good. And I think that's exactly where he's at if he were to be offered the position of climate czar in a Elizabeth Warren administration or something like that. He would leave the citizens of Washington State in a heartbeat. And so we need to get that message out to the voters and show there is a viable alternative. We can elect a Republican governor that's actually going to do more than pontificate and travel around the country, but actually is going to move our state forward. And so that's what we're focused on.
Well, last question for you. How many more entries into the race on the Republican side are we realistically expecting? Lauren Culp, police chief over in Republican, State Senator Phil Fortunato have announced. State Rep Drew Stokesbury seems like he's ready to announce. I'm assuming that might happen at some point soon. How many people do we think, how crowded is this race going to be?
I think there may end up being one or two more. I guess we'll see. I mean, ultimately, our position is we're neutral. It's just like back in 2016 with the RNC when you had 16 candidates running for president. It's important that the voters get to decide who represents them best and who they believe is the strongest challenger to take on and defeat Governor Inslee. And so we're committed to laying the groundwork to helping all candidates equally, but ultimately allowing our voters to pick the person that is going to move forward and be the next governor of Washington State.
So Washington State Republican Party annual dinner is on Friday, September 13th. It's in Bellevue. Governor Scott Walker is the second big speaker that's going to be there. I, of course, number one. I will be emceeing the event. I had a whole bunch of really good material having to do with Inslee running for president. So now my material, it's just me. But I'll try to make it funny as I go along emceeing the event.
I am sure, Jason, it will be great. And
it's mean.
One more plug. Everybody go to InsleeTrip.com. Sign the petition. Tell Governor Inslee he needs to reimburse the taxpayers. We've already paid multiple millions of dollars for his security. He should use his campaign funds and not make the hardworking taxpayers pay for that. We're going to hand deliver those petitions tomorrow at noon and would love to have your name on the list. So sign the petition at InsleeTrip.com.
InsleeTrip.com. Pride of Puyallup, Caleb Heimlich. Thanks for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Foodie edition.
So we are coming up tomorrow on the deadline for you guys to vote on the best burger of Western Washington. We've been holding a lot of these votes, all of those votes right now on Twitter, and we're in the end stage, aren't we?
Final four.
Ooh, the final four. Who's in it?
It has come down to Red Mill versus Dick's Drive-In and Lil Woody's versus Burger Master. And you have 4 hours left to vote on the Red Mill versus Dick's Drive-In. 5 hours left on Lil Woody's versus Burger Master.
What are the leaders right now? Because earlier it was very close between Burger Master and Lil Woody's, but it was Dick's was killing Red Mill.
Dick's is doing really well against Red Mill. Burger Master has edged a lead over Lil Woody's. I know that's going to rub a lot of people the wrong way, because there's a lot of Lil Woody fans that listen to the show.
Including myself. I voted today at twitter.com/770KTTH. Or, by the way, text the keyword TWEET to 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you a link so you can participate. Right now, it's just for folks on Twitter. So if you don't have a Twitter account, well, that's silly. It's 2019, guys. Come on. Twitter.com/770KTTH or just text the keyword TWEET to 1-800-465-8770. It is uncomfortably close for my favorite of what's left, Lil Woody's.
Yeah, Lil Woody's going to have to step it up. 5 hours left to vote for Lil Woody's or Burger Master. And tomorrow, some new news. Maybe you don't even know about this.
I know everything.
The final round, which will be the winner of Lil Woody's and Burger Master and Red Will versus Dick's Drive-In, will go live. The vote will go live at 6 a.m. And that means at 4:15 for my burger review time, we will have the winner of the listener vote, the Twitter vote, as well as my reveal on what is actually the best burger in the city of Seattle. So 4:15, a lot of stuff is going on.
I already know the answer for what's your favorite.
No, you don't.
It's Henry's.
No, it's not.
It's Henry's Tavern.
It's not.
That was the best review you get.
You have no idea how this works, Jason.
Oh, because you broke it down into different categories. I saw the draft.
Ignorant. Oh, wait, we can't forget this.
I know that I'm an idiot.
So, yeah, so there we go. So we shouldn't take anything.
Text the keyword TWEET to 1-800-465-8770. Do it right now. Participate, vote, have a voice in making or breaking. I mean, Dick's might not survive unless they win this particular vote. Same thing for Lil Woody's and Burgermaster and Red Mill. I mean, their businesses are on the line.
Yeah, again, but what do you know?
I know that I'm an idiot. I know that I'm an idiot. Yeah.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. It's brought to you by Sean Keller, Smiles by Design. The concept is very simple to understand. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, and they end up ignoring all the cities you care about and actually live in. And so get this, we ignore the city of Seattle. We spend all of our time on you. And we start in Everett, where both the homelessness situation and the gang situation has gotten so out of hand, at least in parts of Everett, that the council just approved a new law meant to protect staff members and patients at hospitals. It's now a gross misdemeanor for anyone to interfere or disrupt the functions at any medical facility in the city, including trespassing and disturbing the peace. Now, I always assumed that that was already against the law and already a misdemeanor, but apparently it was not. And so the council decided that, yeah, okay, we're going to take a stand here as a means to sort of disincentivize people from doing this kind of thing. And it's a direct response to the homelessness issue, which is directly tied to the drug issue, to the mental health issue that a lot of people who are homeless are dealing with. But beyond that, it's also to deal with some of the gang problems. In fact, King 5 says at Providence Medical Center, the third largest hospital in Washington, metal detectors are used to screen people coming into the emergency room. Staff is trained in de-escalation techniques for unruly visitors. Now, this is not something that any hospital should have to deal with any kind of regularity. Every second that they're spending on something like that is a second they're not spending with a patient, giving them the treatment that they actually need so that they can actually leave the hospital. Executive Director of Operations Darren Reddick said the ordinance is going to be a big help. Here he is talking with Cairo 7 TV.
In those cases where it doesn't work and it escalates, we have a pretty strong support from the Everett Police Department. If we have an issue, they know, and they show up very quickly and work very closely with our security officers to kind of help manage the situation.
And really, that's what it's going to be about. It's going to be about the cops and their willingness to arrest, because under this new ordinance, a third offense under the statute would result in a $1,000 fine and 30 days in jail. Now, when we're talking about this and homelessness, this is not, the $1,000 fine is not going to ever be paid, right? But the 30 days in jail, maybe will change the situation. Obviously, when we're talking about gang members, the $1,000 fine and the 30 days in jail is going to be a little bit more meaningful. But the person is homeless, they're not paying the $1,000 ever, okay? But maybe if you start to enforce the law like we've been talking about, and that seems to be a trend of today's show, and really for the last couple months, of just enforcing the law against people who are breaking it. I know that's crazy in Washington State. But if the cops do that, then maybe, just maybe, they'll be in a position where they don't have to spend so much time dealing with this kind of nonsense. And by the way, beyond the issue that this brings to the staff members there, think about the patients and their families. You're going into the emergency room because there's something very serious. Let's say you're visiting your father who just had a heart attack and you're already concerned. And then all of a sudden on the way in, you see some dude who's homeless or some gangbanger who's there, who's causing problems. Like, that brings you down as well, and that adds stress to your life that you just don't need at the time. So good on the Everett City Council for passing this. Let's see if it actually has any teeth. Let's see if they're actually going to enforce. If they enforce, awesome. This is good news for us all. Meanwhile, protesters in Port Townsend claimed that they were sprayed with herbicides by a company that I guess they don't like. But officials are all coming out and saying, yeah, that didn't happen. Total nonsense. The protesters are trying to get Pope resources to stop spraying herbicide via their helicopters. They say it's bad for the environment, but particularly it's bad for the nearby city lake, which is where they get their drinking water from. And so the company is all like, okay, guys, we get that you're crazy environmentalists, but it's actually not dangerous. But the protesters don't believe that. These are environmentalists. They are like cult members who believe what they believe as if it were their religion. And so they show up to the area where the spraying is happening, thinking that the spraying will stop because they're there, but the helicopter keeps doing the spraying, and then they get all mad that they ended up getting sprayed, or at least that's what they claimed. Here's Lizzie Andrews. She's a protester talking with King 5 TV.
We were under the impression that they would not spray people that were there. If they saw people on the ground, they would not be spraying us. And they were. So I felt that it was too dangerous at that point as the chopper came closer and closer to us. The drift was hitting us, although the chopper was not directly over our heads.
So just real quickly, when you show up to a spot where you know that they're doing the spraying, shouldn't you expect that you're going to get sprayed? Again, they're actually saying, officials say that they didn't get touched with any of the spray, but let's say that's a lie and they told... Don't you expect to get sprayed?
It's in the realm of possibility.
Right? It's like you're there because you're mad that they're spraying and you know that they're going to spray. And if they just not spray because you showed up, all that means is that you win and they can't allow that to happen. Just throwing that out there is one of those things. Now, I saw some of the cell phone video that was given to King 5. They posted it on their website and it shows a helicopter flying nearby. Their group was on the road outside of Pope Resources Timber Stand. It's about a little over a half a mile from City Lake, which again is the place where they get the drinking reservoir for Port Townsend. David Baker is another protester, and he makes the worst possible comparison ever.
And it's not a liquid like we might pour in a crack to kill a weed. It's aerated. It's coming as a mist. You know, it went right into my lungs. I mean, I'm sure I had a lot of it in my body, maybe still do. If you saw a bullet coming at your family, would you step in front of it?
No, I don't like my family.
So, yeah, like that.
Wait, I mean, yeah. That's what... So he's claiming he saw the mist coming his way, and he jumped in front of it to protect the person behind him? It's a mist. They're still going to breathe it.
Covers a lot of square footage.
They're going to breathe it in, too. And it's the worst possible question to pose to someone like me. Because, no, of course I'm not going to stand in front of a bullet going to my family. Well, I mean, which family member?
You're bringing it up like you want some therapy here. Like, do you want to go in depth on this, on your family issues?
I don't want therapy, but I probably need therapy.
Yeah, because you brought it up.
DNR Forest Practice Forester Ross Goodwin said, they were not sprayed. The helicopter started its passes down the slope and they left the site. And then on top of everything else, Pope Resources said in a statement, with respect to the claims of damaging impacts of the water supply, the herbicides we use, when applied according to the applicable regulations, pose no risk to human health or the environment. Our application was approximately 0.6 miles away from City Lake and outside of the watershed. I feel like they have that stuff that you can buy at Whole Foods to rinse off vegetables and eat it. They're fine here, too. It's probably the same thing.
They don't just use water?
No, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to do something else.
Oh, I use water.
No, I know that apparently you're dying if you do that, and you're going to eat all the garbage within the, on the cucumbers or whatever you're eating.
Toughens
and let's be clear,
system.
Most people don't even clean them, right?
Toughens your immune system.
I guess. I have an update. I wasn't expecting to do this, but we have breaking news. Do we have a breaking news sounder?
Breaking news. It's the Jason Rant Show. Breaking news.
Oh, my God. Okay. You remember the ACT test that were either stolen or went missing from the test center out again, I think, actually, in Everett? It happened about a month ago where kids took their test. They sent it to the courier via FedEx, but it never showed up. And so there was a whole bunch of to-do.
Breaking news on AM 770 KTTA.
No, that's too late. And we can't have a serious breaking news one because this is not like a serious story. People are going to think someone died.
Well, we had it.
Okay. Well, FedEx just found the package containing the missing ACT test answers from Mariner High School. The spokesperson for ACT, his name is Ed Colby. He wrote in an email. It was in one of their facilities between there and here. That's helpful. It was immediately shipped back to us overnight. According to the Everett Herald and Andrea Brown, he did not have details where the facility was in the 1,900 miles or so between Everett and Iowa City, where they were to get the actual test scores. The students were just informed a week after they were told the test went missing. Though Mariner was the test site, the ACT test was not administered by the Mukilteo School District. So if you're mad at Mukilteo, just know it's not their fault. They say the company is in the process of scoring the tests right now. I feel like just because of all the stress associated with this, the students still should get something in return. Just a couple extra points. Again, I don't remember how, because I didn't take the ACT, I took the SAT. I don't know how the ACT is scored. It's definitely scored differently. Just give an extra 10 points just for the stress. Because they some of these kids probably was like, oh my God, I studied so hard, now I got to study again. I got to get all psyched up for the whole thing over again. Give them an extra 10 points. That's all I'm saying. And that's probably nothing. There's probably not even a full correct answer's worth of points.
What about the kid who goes to a different school, who grew up with nothing, had nothing, and got a certain amount of points, but because 10 extra points were awarded this person, they
and
got
that
a higher
kid's
score,
parents were divorced, and he's maybe living with a disability, and he's low income, right?
Yeah.
Put it all in there. And he's colorblind.
Right.
And he doesn't have taste buds.
And now one kid was handed 10 points more than him, and that kid gets accepted into college before this kid. What about that kid? Are you not for that kid?
No.
Really?
Is that
shocking
to you?
I believe it, but I'd rather not have that be the reality.
Well, whatever. The good news is they found the test. This is good for the kids. They don't have to retake the test. They say that they're going to expedite the scoring of these particular tests because everything already takes about 2 weeks, at least from the written portion of the ACT. So they're going to expedite that, and they'll figure it all out. But this is good. This is a good resolution.
There's some breaking news.
Well, yeah, but now we're just going to get sued for copyright infringement.
No, that's our breaking news. Oh.
Now it sounds like
NBC
it comes from a Steve.
Nightly News. Okay.
1-800-465-877. If you want to send me your text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in, telling all your friends about it. Really do appreciate it. Don't forget, we are on the hunt for the best burger in all of Seattle, and we're allowing you guys right now to vote on Twitter. Text the keyword tweet to 1-800-465-8770. Make sure you get your vote in. The voting ends at what time tonight? 6?
Roughly, it's different for each one.
Oh God,
the Dick versus Red Mill is around.
It's got to be so hard.
8 and
all I have to do is do one
the
thing.
The Burger Master.
Right. All I we'll do it exactly for 4
Lil
hours.
Woody's
and that's
is
it. And of course,
9.
He just keeps talking and talking. Okay, whatever he just said, do it. Text the keyword tweet to 1-800-465-8770. Bernie Sanders just released his version of the Green New Deal because we don't have enough pie in the sky, impossible to afford, and more impossible to implement plans. Thank you so much. We got another one on the books. This one is $16.3 trillion worth of plans that they claim will pay for itself in 15 years. And two of the ways they say it's going to pay for itself is just rather preposterous and actually doesn't make any sense. First, they say making the wealthy and large corporations pay their fair share. That's like the worst way to explain how you're going to pay for something that's $16 trillion. Oh, well, we're going to get, like, corporations and stuff because they're greedy. And, they've got $1 trillion, basically, that they're just hoarding. We're going to take it from them. Ben Shapiro had a really good response to this on Twitter today. It was just like, I wish I lived in the world where they thought this kind of money just existed and was easy to attain. But beyond that, and this part is just sort of self-defeating in my view, they say making the fossil fuel industry pay for their pollution through litigation, fees, and taxes, and eliminating federal fossil fuel subsidies. Okay, so let's say you're able to implement what essentially they're saying is a carbon tax, right? I mean, this is their version of a carbon tax. Let's say they actually implement it, and all of a sudden, all of these fossil fuel companies will look at that and say, oh, wow, you're actually going to bankrupt us. We're no longer going to use the type of energy that creates the kind of pollution that they're going to target us with. We're going to cut that down completely. And let's say they go ahead and do that. Well, then you're not going to get any money from them, right? You're not going to get any sort of tax on them from the pollution because they've actually successfully cut it down. And by the way, that's essentially what Bernie Sanders wants. He said there's no middle ground on this at all today.
It is no secret that we must transition away from fossil fuel, period. End of discussion.
Period. End of discussion.
There ain't no middle grounds here. There is no middle ground.
There ain't no middle ground. I do not like the grammar there, so let me say it one more time, but correctly, there is no middle ground. Thank you. So let's say that's the truth, and again, you're able to get rid of fossil fuels. How will you pay then for the trillion-dollar program that you're trying to implement? How many Green New Deals do we have now? Because we have the AOC version. Every other candidate who has announced, including the ones who no longer are in, like Jay Inslee, they've all announced their own version of a environmentalist plan. So how many more exactly do we need? Just pick one and go with it. I don't even care. And the funny thing is, they're going to do this town hall event on CNN talking specifically about global climate change. And what I think is going to be very apparent of the people who are on that stage, I believe it's 8 in total or 7 in total. Kamala Harris said she couldn't do it because of a scheduling conflict, but my guess is she just isn't very strong on this. They're going to go up there. What do you think is going to be the main differences? You're going to have Joe Biden, who I think will come off as the most normal as far as the planning is concerned. He's still going to use all the progressive buzzwords and talking points and push it that way, but you're going to have him. Then you're going to have 6 others who basically say the exact same thing. There's not a whole lot of difference between, for example, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders on this, right? They're going to say the same thing. We're going to have to get away from fossil fuel. We're going to have to go after the polluters. We're going to charge them a tax or a fee of some kind as a result of this. And by the way, we're going to pay for it by going after those wealthy, large corporations and finally let them pay their fair share, although we're not going to tell you what that fair share actually means because we have no clue ourselves. The three top pollers right now, Biden, Bernie, and Elizabeth Warren, right? And so 2 of them are going to say the exact same thing. So I don't know if we're going to learn anything from this, and I don't know if the polls are going to change as a result of this. And let me tell you, as much as Democratic voters want to tell you they care about climate change, my sense is they don't actually want to see an hour or 2 hour long debate and conversation about the topic. They don't really want that. I am passionate about a whole bunch of things. I'm passionate, for example, on gun rights, on First Amendment issues, on economic concerns, immigration concerns. I don't necessarily want to see a debate solely on immigration, especially when we're talking about looking at it from one perspective that's mostly going to be in agreement. It sounds kind of boring, but we'll end up seeing what happens. But this is just not a good plan. It doesn't seem like a good plan. It doesn't seem like a plan that has any legs. But of course, it is filled with all of these buzzwords that make progressives all warm and fuzzy. Meanwhile, Senator Mazie Hirono, who is the Democrat from Hawaii, who is arguably, like on a scale, Tom, of 1 to 10, how mean do you think I can get, understanding I'm going after Mazie Hirono?
You could crank it 10 up to being, 11.
Okay, so she's the dumbest person I think I've ever heard speak from a position of power like a senator.
I said you can, I didn't say you should.
Okay. Well, I mean, I could have been meaner. She was on MSNBC and she was talking about this new plan by the Trump administration to not separate kids from their parents once they come to the border and try to get into this country illegally. And here's the statement that she made in this interview.
I did have a shadow hearing on what happens in these facilities and what happens to the children. Clearly, they are harmed irreparably. Okay. And our country should not be imposing this kind of cruelty on children. But I think that the Trump administration people sit around every single day thinking up new ways to be cruel to these migrants. That's what they do. And tomorrow they'll probably come up with something else.
I think Senator Hirono gets together with her staff members, her chief of staff. They even bring in the interns. They all get into a room together, nice little conference table, and she looks around and she says, okay, what thing can I say today that's both incredibly stupid but also has no facts to back up the statement that I just made? What can I say that's just like dumber than what I said yesterday? And then there's this little bit of silence. It's almost a little bit of awkward silence where someone is waiting for the other person to talk. And at some point, one person decides, okay, I guess it'll be me. And then they'll lean in and they'll look sort of a little quizzically at the senator, a little sort of nodding their head like, ma'am, all you have to do is speak. We don't have to plan any of this. Just go. We'll book you with Chris Matthews. We'll put you on some radio show. And all you have to do is talk. That's it. And then she'll sit back and like, good point. And the irony of all of this is she has this meeting every single day. She's not getting the point. To come out and actually say this administration is purposefully trying to come up with policies to hurt children is a special kind of low. Like, that's a special kind of nastiness. And it's funny because I think I made this comment yesterday sort of with hyperbole in mind of, you've got a lot of people who want to pretend that the president is getting together with his administration, trying to come up with policies to purposely hurt kids. And then yet, weirdly, Mazie Hirono, the Democratic senator from Hawaii, says just that.
Well, she does listen to the show.
I mean, she is a subscriber on the podcast.
Yeah, she
does.
All the
That's
time.
Why we always got. I was like, where is that area code from? And you said it was from Honolulu, which is the only city in Hawaii that I could come up with.
Oahu, Maui.
Okay.
Leaky.
When you talk like this about your political opponents, you dehumanize them. And this, again, is part of a bigger strategy to dehumanize the other side because it makes it very easy to go after them, to get a whole bunch of people on your side when you decide to go after them and dehumanize them. This is why we call, why we see progressives call us conservatives, including the Jews, Nazis. They do this because they don't want to argue the merits of the topics. They want to dehumanize you, turn you into a caricature that's so much easier to debate and dismiss. And that's what she's doing here. And it's absolutely disgusting. It's such a bad faith argument that she's engaged in. And it's incredibly transparent. And shame on MSNBC for not pushing back at all. But it is MSNBC. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show. Want to join the conversation? Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. It's AM 770 KTTH.